is Rick Walker. Welcome to another Leadership Network podcast. You know, North American Christians are interested in church planting in a way not seen for many decades. In response, Leadership Network commissioned a research project that surveyed over 200 church planting churches, more than 100 denominational leaders from dozens of denominations, and over 45 church planting networks. The research addressed a number of factors, several of which set the stage for what many believe is possible, a church planting movement in North America. I'd like to introduce our guests, Ed Stetzer, Director of Research at Lifeway Research, and Dave Travis, Managing Director of Leadership Network. Well, man, this is such a massive study. I don't even know where to begin, but is this the largest ever conducted, and what is the scale and scope of the project? Dave, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I don't know if it is the largest conducted. It's the largest I've ever seen, and I've been involved with church planting for about 20 years. It is just a state of church planting in the United States. There are other studies that have addressed some more global church planting issues, but like I said, it's the largest one I've ever seen, and I think it is a very comprehensive study that I have not seen the scale of before.
Ed, what were the biggest surprises to you?
Well, I think as you kind of looked at some of the study, and I would say, and it probably is the largest when you bring together the component aspects of the study. There was a survivability study that was a part that's very large, and some others that were all part of the it was a network of studies, if you will, that was brought together here. I think some of the things that surprised us was the level of enthusiasm for church planting that's there. And yet, much of that enthusiasm is concentrated in certain churches and certain denominations that have networks that have high profile. So I do think one of the biggest surprises, if you look back 20 years ago when I planted my first church, we couldn't find a resource on church planting. Today, there's a plethora. I mean, you can go anywhere and find helpful things, not just about church planting, but church planting of certain kinds and certain, you know, emphases. So these are all part of that. You get over 1 million hits on Google when you just type in church planting with quotes. So, I mean, there's a huge interest in the subject, and Christianity Today just did a feature on the church planting, calling it kind of the newest form of evangelism, replacing older forms. So I think we're just seeing that played out. Church planting is on the minds of Christians in North America.
The state of church planting in the USA, that's our topic, and our guest Ed Stetzer, Dave Travis. Let's talk about the impact. What findings do you think will have the biggest impact?
I think some of the things that we're beginning to see take place are we're seeing an increasing interest in church planting networks, and I think that's one of the things we really tried to focus in on. You mentioned that we did 100-plus leaders from over 40 denominations, but we also did 45 church planting networks. Denominations don't get the press, so they're still the primary funder of church planting in North America, but these networks are gathering many times young pastors, young planters who want to go out and start churches. There's a lot of energy there, and there's a lot of high-profile plants and planters and sponsor churches in those networks. So I think that's one of the biggest findings is how churches are choosing to partner together to accomplish the church planting task.
Let's talk a little more detail about we have denominations, churches, networks, network groups. According to what you learned, what kinds of groups are leading the way in church planting?
Well, talking about denominations, you have several folks that have a strong focus on church planting. And it's interesting to see the diversity. You can see the Missouri Synod Lutherans, for example, have a goal of planting hundreds and hundreds of churches kind of coming up on the anniversary of the Reformation. Reformed Church in America, a similar focus. Disciples of Christ in the Mainline has a strong church planting department because kind of a unique funding system that they have. When churches close, the resources go into church planting. And the Nazarenes, I mean, all those mainline denominations have strong church planting emphases. They're doing well at it. United Methodists have recently announced the seven pathways, kind of the future. And one of the key ones is church planting. And so we don't necessarily think sometimes of mainline denominations engaged in church planting, but Christian Century put out an article about mainline denominations are rediscovering church planting. To be fair, you have to probably look at evangelical denominations to see the bulk of that, groups like the Baptist General Conference that have basically in the last 10, 15 years have planted, again, doubled the size of their denomination through church planting. Evangelical Covenant, the Missionary Church, probably it's a smaller group, but as probably the movementally has the strongest church planting emphasis, the Assemblies of God. Presbyterian Church in America, their churches have just done a super job engaging their presbyteries in church planting. So different groups, Pentecostal Charismatics, have been engaged in church planting, more so historically, but again, re-engaged emphasis kind of taking place in some of those movements. They tend to be a little more difficult to track because they tend to take place a little under the radar, a little less report-focused, less organized in the sense that you can get reports on them. But a lot of denominations engaged in church planting, seeing, and we talk about people talking about being missional, they're seeing North America as a mission field needing to be evangelized and recongregationalized. And as Christianity Today recently pointed out, they're seeing church planting as the tool to do that.
I think the thing not to lose sight of, too, that wasn't mentioned by Ed there was the number of church planting churches that are coming to the fore.
That's right.
Who see it as part of their primary mission to multiply rapidly the number of congregations that they directly resource serve. They plant, send out planters. And that's one thing that Leadership Network has been involved with now for about 10 years and working with those church planting churches. And so we're seeing a growing interest and increase in those numbers as well.
I just touched on the denominations. When you look at the churches and the church planting networks, and we did those separately, broke them down into three things, we really see a strong emphasis on church planting churches. And we actually set out some standards for that and found that, you know, there are these rapidly growing parent churches are really setting the standard. And you know, I don't work for Leadership Network, so let me say that it was fascinating to me to see just how many of the world-class church-planting churches had kind of touched and been a part of some of the Leadership Network processes. But we really see the huge growth in that. Churches, one of the things we put in the report, churches are really re-engaging in this mission. They're seeing this as it's not the denomination's role. Matter of fact, interesting, the Presbyterian Church in America said that our job is to help these churches like Redeemer or Perimeter and others. Our job is to help these churches do it. And so I think it's an encouraging thing to see these reproducing churches and then now granddaughter and great-granddaughter churches making a difference. Still, some of them are denominational, some of them are not, but all of them aggressively involved in church planting.
Ed Stetzer, Director of Research at Lifeway Research, and Dave Travis, Managing Director of Leadership Network, are with us. If you would like to take a look at the research, go to leadnet.org/church planting. Guys, let's talk about what the research revealed regarding the house church movement.
Sure. What we did is we surveyed 97 organic church leaders who attended a conference and just asked them ways that they were engaged in church planting. One of the things we also did is we did a qualitative analysis by asking different movement leaders what they were doing in church planting, and then we asked some of their values. And there's a real interest in the house church movement. Barna has put out some things saying that that you know large numbers of people are involved in the house church and they're satisfied in that. And the Center for Missional Research at the North American Mission Board has done some things. What we did is in the survey, we asked them if they had helped start new churches. Say churches have helped start new churches in the last 5 years. 30% said they started 6 or more new churches. They helped. It didn't necessarily mean that you know their group had 15 and they'd sent 8 one way and 7 the other, but they helped. 22% had started at least one new church, 11% had started 2, 18% 3, and so there was a significant number of involvement in church planting. What we did find is also among the values, organic church values, we asked the question, how frequently did you communicate certain things? And the most common things were, you know, relationship with Christ, 97% of people, importance of prayer, 97%. Those were high. Personal evangelism was 60%, a little lower. Group evangelism was 18%, 2 evangelism ones, but about 26% made starting new churches a consistently communicated weekly or monthly value. And so what we found is there's a lot of shaping of spiritual formation in new churches. There's a decent amount of church multiplication, but also that wasn't one of the highest values that was there. But I think it would be fair to say they were certainly planting churches at a pace that many established churches had not.
There are a lot of myths that fly around when it comes to church plants. Did you find that any of these myths were debunked, and if so, what were they?
I think probably the biggest one is there has been a number kind of floated around. A lot of times when people do a conference, they'll say, you know, 80% or 90% of churches, you know, new churches close after a year or fail in the first year, and the reality is that wasn't the case. You know, and that sort of makes sense. I mean, most churches at least make it through part of a year, but they begin to struggle a little later. Well, as part of this project, we partnered with the Center for Missional Research at the North American Mission Board and did a church planting survivability and health study. Over 1,000 churches were involved in it, 500 phone interviews. And what we found is that after year one, about 99% were still around. By year four, that dropped down to 68%. And so we're talking about two-thirds still exist after 4 years. Now, we don't want to over-celebrate that, because at the same time, the percent self-sufficient by the fourth year is just over 60%. So we're still churches are struggling, and the size doesn't break 100 in the typical new church after 4 years. So it was both. I think a lot of times people, they go to church planting conferences and they listen to all these church planters, and I planted this church and it grew to 500 in a year. But we forget that they're on the platform because they're unusual. Typical church planting is a longer process, it's a harder process, and it grows more slowly than I think those who write the books or speak at the conferences portray, because that's why they're there. So I think those were some of the surprises. Maybe Dave has some others as well.
Yeah, based on it's very similar to that. We've heard forever that there's more churches closing than opening every year. And by the best estimates we can have, and we're just talking, I think, about kind of traditional church plants, about 4,000 a year being planted, and the estimates about 3,600 are closing. So that's a net gain of 400, plus all the organic churches and house churches that are just too numerous to count.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to remember that we've got to put organic churches in a different category, because they don't show up and the mechanisms that we do research on. So I think you're right, and we don't know all that's going on in that movement, but it's encouraging to see the planting has begun to, in a sense, we're reseeding North America with churches as others have died.
And just like you said earlier, Ed, I think a lot of that is not just the evangelical denominations and movements are focused on this, but also a lot of the mainline denominations now have picked up and are really aggressively attempting to start new churches.
Yeah, I think I would say that they tend to do it more quietly, where evangelicals tend to say, look, we're planting churches, and they announce it from the rooftops. I was surprised at the level of involvement when I met with the leadership, and I kind of traveled around the country and did many of these interviews in person, and you know, went from New York City to Indiana to L.A., and I meet with these leaders, and just to hear their passion and what they're doing in church planting. And sometimes they don't even call it church planting. The Nazarenes call it New Start, because church planting didn't resonate with their people. So it wouldn't even show up on a Google search, but they're engaged in it in effective ways and really seeing it as a key part of their mission in North America.
Well, it's the state of church planting in the USA, a massive study surveying over 200 church planting churches, more than 100 denominational leaders from dozens of denominations, over 45 church planting networks. Surely, guys, after looking through all the research, you probably found some, I don't know if you could call it the best way, but is there a best way to plant a church according to the research?
I would say that there are some best practices we would identify, but I think at the end of the day, we've got to just recognize, Rick, that the how of church planting is in many ways determined by the who, when, and where of culture. And so I would think in some communities the best way is going to be an organic church, and some it's going to be a seeker church, and a traditional church, and ethnic church. So, but we did find one of the questions that Dave tasked us with was to really ask the question of who is seeing men and women come to faith in Christ, being transformed by the gospel. And we began to look at some of those things. And what I think is interesting, right now there's a strong emphasis on missional, incarnational approaches to planting churches. I think that's a good thing in many ways. But what we found is that many of those who were reaching the most lost people tended to be more in the seeker or the purpose-driven models of the way that they were planting churches. They put a high emphasis on that and led to higher conversions. So that was one of the factors I think was interesting. Probably the highest percent reproducing numbers would be more of the organic. So I guess it depends upon what your scorecard is. If it's conversions, if it's reproduction, if it's community transformation, then you'd probably have, look at other models that are more, missional, incarnational, even ethnic models. So that answer probably is hard to do. It depends upon what kind of church you're planning and where.
You mentioned earlier that after 4 years, 68% were still surviving and operating. Let's talk about the factors influencing survivability. The research, you guys studied over 100 factors that were tested for statistical significance in relationship to survivability. What did you find out about survivability factors?
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting parts. This was the part we did in partnership with the North American Mission Board and Center for Missional Research. And what we found is that there were several things that led to statistically significant. And what that means is that if we redid this study 20 times and had the same p-value, it's what it's called, 20 times, 19 times we'd come up with the same result. So it's a very high probability that these factors were not chance. But they were statistically significant factors. And what we found is that in one, I'll give you the four things that led to higher. One was church plant expectations. The chance of survivability increased about 400% when the church planter has a realistic understanding and expectations of the church plant experience. And that kind of gets at what I said earlier, is that I think sometimes, and I'm not certainly anti-conference by any stretch, but conferences give church planters and books give church planters often unrealistic expectations. And so they get out there, and they're not running 200 after a year, and they start to panic. Well, I think having realistic expectations has shown to be one of those factors influencing survivability. Another is church member leadership development. And another was a stewardship plan. Now, one of the things that I found odd on the stewardship plan, maybe odd's the wrong word, Rick, but one of the things I found interesting on the stewardship plan was that the only factor that was on all three of the variables we looked at survivability, attendance, and baptism/conversions, the only factor that showed up on all three of those was a stewardship plan. You know, those church survivability is increased by 178% where there is a proactive stewardship development plan within a church plant. I think that really goes against much of what we had maybe understood in church planning, never talk about money. Churches that never talk about money aren't around several years later to talk about money. And I think that one of the things we found in all those factors is they had a plan. One other is a church planner peer group. Their survivability increased by 135% when the church planner is meeting with a group of church planning peers. So you put expectations, leadership development, stewardship, and peer group together, those are some factors that really influence survivability in a very positive way.
Speaking of money, how much does it cost to plan a church? Did the research give any hints on average cost?
No, it depends on church. We looked at some of the leading church planning churches in the country, for example. One of them was a French-speaking Baptist church in Brooklyn, New York, and the amount of money they send out is they give a person enough to go buy dinner and go tell people about Jesus and go plant a church, and they send out these Haitian church planters all over America. Whereas you see Redeemer Presbyterian, both in the same city in New York City, planting churches in Manhattan and investing, you know, much, much larger sums of money. We see the organic church, of course, would have no need for that and just would be more focused on the relational nature of organic church planting. So it was kind of all over the map. It really depended upon the model of church planting that they used. One of the things we thought was interesting, just touching back on the church planting networks of the 45 we interviewed, is just the incredible different funding between them. You know, the average annual budget was about $600,000, but really the groups were divided into two groups. Some had a budget over $1 million, and most, you divide the rest kind of under $1 million. And really the average annual budget for 90% of these networks was about $180,000. And then the remaining 10% was almost $2 million. And so the resources just vary, and the networks raise the funds necessary to plant the church using the paradigm they believe God's called them to use.
Ed Stetzer and Dave Travis are with us, and we're discussing the state of church planting in the USA. If you would like to take a look at the research, go to leadnet.org/church planting. Dave, question for you. Where will church planting be? Let's fast forward the tape 10 years from now. Where would you speculate church planting will be?
Well, I see a couple different scenarios, Rick. One scenario, the hopeful scenario, of course, is that with the information that's found in the State of Church Planting reports, they're going to be on the Leadership Network website, as well as the plethora of conferences and other research and other great inspiring stories out there. That will inspire still yet further waves of church planters to be raised up and to go out and plant churches to reach Americans, especially suspect that planting among non-Anglos will continue to increase at a rapid rate. That's the hopeful scenario. The distressing scenario, of course, is that vision can always be lost, and at denominational levels and certain church planting networks, things go through a life cycle and people can get discouraged and begin to swing back the other way and to say, well, we need to take care of the churches we got and these kind of things. The other thing that I would say to the future is, I think a lot of it is demographically driven, and as we have this bulge of young adults that come up and begin to create new forms of institutional faith, that there'll always be a need for new churches and new church plants to serve those new needs. So I'm hopeful on the future.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the we're kind of at this transition point when, you know, church planting has begun. It's interesting when Christianity Today put out their article, church planting has begun now. Some people say, well, let's not all go into church planting, which is so funny. You know, 20 years ago when I planted my first church, people asked me if I couldn't get a real job. And now that's become a preferred ministry option. But I got to agree with Dave. I think ethnicity has to be seen. In the largest Protestant denomination, the North American Mission Board, Southern Baptist, the majority of their church plants are non-Anglo now. And so we see this huge explosion of church plants among ethnics as our society becomes more and more ethnically diverse. But I would say that, and Dave, I think you're right, I think we need to be aware that this emphasis may lead to a backlash. It's happened historically in the past. And I think what we need is a both and. We need planting new churches, but we also need, you know, revitalizing existing churches. I think the challenge is that one is immeasurably more difficult than the other. And so many demographic, you mentioned, Dave, many young pastors are choosing church planting. I think we need to challenge them to choose both.
If this research had been done 20 years ago, what trends would be different at that time from today?
That's a great question, Rick. I think ultimately we wouldn't be able to find the practitioners like we find now. You know, 20 years ago was when I planted my first church, and I could find one book on church planting. A guy named Jack Redford wrote it. Now, since then, I went back, and as a matter of fact, even as part of this project, we went back and brought up every book in the English language on church planting that we could find in the modern era. And we found others, but I had one book. And now you look just in the last few years, you've gotten, I think, 11, 12, 13 books just in the last 2 years published on church planting. So I'm not even sure, Dave, and maybe you've been around through this journey as well, I'm not even sure we could have done a study of this magnitude with anything more than visiting five or six denominations, maybe a few churches, and then be done.
Yeah, I'm not that much older than you, Ed. However, I think that 20 years ago, and that's when I was also leading and working in an organization that was focused on church planting, you know, our mindset was still geographic. And so new churches were needed to reach a new geography or a new area of a community. And now it's clearly affinity-based. I think the second thing, just like you said, Ed, is we wouldn't have found the number of church planting churches who really viewed it as their primary mission. And so this shift somewhat from the denominational form of church planting to the churches that plant other churches, I think, is the big thing. When I attended a church planting conference 20 years ago, it was what I would call entrepreneurial church planting. People who raised support from their friends went out, planted a church, independent of anything else. And that was a subset of the church planting world. But now we see much more these churches and networks that are really getting behind church planters to help plant the new churches to reach new people.
Yeah, it's a good day to plant a church. It really is. It's and Dave, I think you're right. You know, well, the one part that I think is so essential is 20 years ago, when you plant, if someone said to me or to Dave or whatever, you know, what kind of church you're planting, they would say it's a Methodist church or Presbyterian or Baptist Assemblies, whatever. Today, you know, there would be 9 descriptors before you got to that denominational label. It'd be, well, it's a missional, incarnational, seeker sensitive, moderately reformed, cell based, you know, blank church. Or it's a purpose-driven seeker, you know, whatever it may be. I think you're right. It's that affinity that's really become a huge issue. And Dave, you're right to bring it up.
What a just an amazing topic. The state of church planting in the USA, as many as 4,000 new churches start each year. Obviously, there's a lot of activity and interest in church planting, more so than the last 100 years or so. That's going to wrap up our time discussing the state of church planting in the USA. Ed Stetzer and Dave Travis have been our guests. If you'd like to take a look at the research, you can go to leadnet.org/churchplanting.
This has been a Leadership Network podcast. To hear more podcasts, go to leadnet.org/podcasts.